I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
It's been a very stressful week, hasn't it?
It's been an extraordinarily stressful 24 hours or so right about now.
A bit behind the scenes, we're actually recording this on January 7th.
Yeah, it has been less than 24 hours since everything started going down at the Capitol. I don't think either of us have had much sleep. So if we're a little off our normal game today, please give us a little bit of leeway. Hopefully by the time you hear this, everything will be calm and we will have had rest. But as we're recording this, we're still a little in the middle of processing what's just happened. So we're going to try to give you a fun show and our normal thing. But please keep that in mind, and we hope you're all doing well.
Before we get to what we're talking about this week, Kiki, what's our news story for the week?
We have two Disney related news stories this week. They're both slightly sad. The first one is the breaking news about voice actor Tom Kane. He is probably best known to Disney fans for his work in the Star Wars franchise. He is a voice actor in the Clone Wars. He voices Yoda and several other characters. He's also heard in The Last Jedi as the new voice of Admiral Ackbar. Unfortunately, we found out since our last recording that he had suffered a stroke around Thanksgiving. And it has taken away his speech. He is barely able to make it through sentences. He can speak a few words kind of haltingly. It's also taken away his ability to read and write, unfortunately. So those are skills that can come back after a stroke. It is possible. But right now, his doctors are saying that his voice is not there now, and it may never come back. So we wish him all the best in his health, not just for his career, but just in general.
Most recently, he did voice Yoda for the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah. He does quite a few characters in that. He's also worked with Powerpuff and Archer. Archer may actually be a Disney property now, but he's done work for on another network, as they would say on television. But yeah, kind of sad story, and our hearts go out to him and his family. We also have to announce the passing of a Disney legend. He was inducted into as a Disney legend in the year 2000. Ron Dominguez, who was known as Mr. Disneyland, passed away in December at the age of 85. He passed away on January the 1st, excuse me. He worked for the Disney company for 39 years. His family, he has a very interesting story. His family owned part of the land that was Disneyland, that was later bought for Disneyland. And his childhood home was on the property, and when Disney bought the property, his childhood home was converted into one of the first office buildings to oversee the construction of that. Just a few days before the park opened, Ron Dominguez was hired as a ticket taker, one of the very first ticket takers at Disneyland. He loved the park so much that he immediately learned everything about the park, everything about every attraction. He became the man who just knew it all. And so they moved him up through various positions, tour guides and, you know, all kinds of things, to the point where eventually this man was the vice president of Walt Disney Attractions West Coast. And so he was then the vice president in charge of Disneyland. And also he's the man they credit with making California Adventure happen. So long career with the company. He had been retired for some time at the time of his death. But really, really interesting story, and was connected to Disneyland since it was just a gleam in Walt's eye, as they would say. So, fascinating. Thank you, Mr. Dominguez, for all your years of service.
So, let's move on to happier things. Let's talk about some cartoons.
Cartoons!
Let's talk about our continuing adventures into the classic Disney era, the classic Walt era, with the second animated feature film, Pinocchio. Last week we talked about Snow White, and one thing I forgot to mention with Snow White was Snow White was actually awarded a honorary Oscar at the Oscar Award, the Academy Awards, for being the first ever feature film. It would have that is the famous picture of the one regular size Oscar and the seven little Oscars.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only was it awarded an honorary Oscar, it was awarded 8.
Yeah. But Pinocchio was the first Disney movie to actually win a competitive Oscar award for the song When You Wish Upon a Star. The song that has pretty much defined the Disney company as a whole. When you watch a Disney movie today, the opening of every Disney movie has that When You Wish Upon a Star melody. You've kind of mentioned it before. It's When You Wish Upon a Star. It's Tinkerbell with the fairy dust over Cinderella's castle.
Yeah.
That
really does sum up Disney as a logo.
Yeah. And the song has been used so many times when it comes to the park itself. The phrase "dreams come true" has been used as a slogan all over the Disney parks, and that song has to many people summarizes what the Disney company is about. When you wish upon a star, your dreams come true. Despite being very critically praised, it didn't do so well at the box office because this is 1940, 6 months into World War II.
Yeah. This was before the U.S. would enter the war.
Yeah, but Disney's
But the overwhelming, you know, the newspapers every day were filled with war overseas. People were very anxious about when and if it would come to American shores, when and if America was going to join the rest of the world in the battle. So it was a time of great anxiety, and it did give a hit to the entertainment industry in general around that time.
Yeah, again, not a lot of people were really willing to go to the movie theater, and international distribution was non-existent. But let's kind of get back into the more positive side of all of this, because I've mentioned this story before, and I really like mentioning this story. Right after Snow White became the big box office hit that it did, everyone was wondering what the next one was going to be. What's the follow-up? And Walt's plan was to do The Wizard of Oz. But MGM picked up the rights before Disney could. And of course, in 1939, MGM released their version of The Wizard of Oz, and it is to this day most people's definitive version of The Wizard of Oz. Okay, so what was going to be the movie? Pinocchio wasn't even the next choice. The next choice was Bambi. And because Disney had, well, he couldn't get the rights to The Wizard of Oz, so he grabbed the rights to Bambi. And Bambi was going to be the second movie. But Disney had a hard time, Disney and his team, rather, had a hard time translating the story of the book to a film. And the animation, in terms of animals, since this was a movie all about animals and not anthropomorphic animals, but realistic-looking animals, the skills of the animation studio weren't there yet. So they would hold off on Bambi for a few years. So they went with Pinocchio, another classic fairy tale. And this part of the story is, you wouldn't think Disney would do this, but Disney was so gung-ho about this movie that he rushed the production to get this movie going, to get it out there. 6 months into production of the movie, Walt didn't like any of it. He didn't like the character designs. He didn't like the script. He liked none of it and threw away 6 months of animation.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like Walt at all.
Exactly. Especially when you would hear stories from the early Katzenberg years of animators upset of having their work thrown out after working weeks and months on it. To hear that Walt did the same thing in 1939, that is crazy. Mostly because the design, you know, they went back to the drawing board. They started everything from scratch. The original design of Pinocchio would look more like an actual wooden puppet, and it didn't work. So they went back and made him look more like a kid. The design that we're more familiar with that actually looks more like a kid than a puppet. Jiminy Cricket looked more like an actual cricket, and they kind of changed that too. Made him look more like a generic human-y bug guy. That he's a cricket because we called him a cricket. It was one of the quotes I ever heard about him.
Yeah, if you've ever come, you know, face to face with a cricket, not really the cutest of creatures.
Yeah, let's quickly go with that while we're on Jiminy Cricket. We've mentioned the phrase that was it's used in Snow White. It got used in Pinocchio. The phrase Jiminy Cricket. You couldn't swear in movies for a time. And let's say that Jiminy Cricket was to replace a different name with the initials JC. So
euphemisms are fun.
Yeah, you couldn't say the Lord's name in vain in a movie. So instead of saying that, they said Jiminy Cricket. So it was their way.
And when you need somebody to be the personification of morality, and you grew up in a Christian nation, I mean, it's kind of what you're going to end up with. Yeah,
yeah.
You're going to end up with Jiminy Cricket.
Today, it would be more like someone saying, "Jeez," but yeah, I don't think we're going to have
Cheesy
a cartoon
character. Crazy.
I don't think we're going to have a cartoon character called Jeez or G Willikers anytime soon.
Yeah.
Eventually, we get to 1940, and Disney decides to have the big world premiere at Rockefeller Center in New York City. And this wasn't just going to be a regular movie premiere. This was going to be all-day premiere event. So to entertain the crowd at Rockefeller Center, they hired 11 little people to dress as Pinocchio to entertain the crowd on sort of this roof area of the theater. And since they were going to be there all day, they gave them plenty of food and plenty of alcohol.
That last part.
Yeah, so after a few hours, the little people got drunk and decided they started yelling at the passersby, including the children. They started fighting. They started gambling. And one of the little people decided it'd be fun to take off all of their clothes, except for the Pinocchio head. And then all of the other little people decided they were also going to take off all of their clothes except for the Pinocchio head. Yeah! That was good thing, Walt.
And this is why we don't drink on the job, kids.
Yeah, all 11 little people. When the cops finally came around, let's just say it looked like a scene out of the Pleasure Island part of this movie. Only Pinocchio's naked. And a real boy.
Moving on.
Yeah. But as we said, Pinocchio entered to great praise. They did some new animation techniques with this movie. The animation of the fairy dust from the Blue Fairy. The water animation was as realistic as like, you could get for the 1940s. So the technological achievements were there. To this day, many people consider Pinocchio to be Walt's greatest achievement in terms of as a filmmaker. Debatable. I mean, some will say it's Snow White. Some would even go as far as saying The Jungle Book. Your taste may vary.
Yeah, I really think that's an extremely subjective thing. But, you know, again, this looks so beautiful. I mean, I'm sure that it's been, you know, restored a little bit and stuff to the point that's on Disney Plus right now.
Yeah.
But this looks beautiful in high def.
Yeah, this also got released on Blu-ray a few years back, so I guess this is from that, the restoration for the Blu-ray. I don't know if it ever got on 4K, but it looks beautiful on the Disney Plus version.
Yeah, to be honest, with stuff like that, the average person is not going to really be able to tell the difference too much. Mm-hmm. That's a really kind of nerdy thing, you know, the kind of resolution difference, I think. But it's so beautiful. I mean, pause this at any point and you could just frame it, mm-hmm. put it on your wall, and live happily, especially some of those water scenes.
Yeah.
I was really like, oh, that just looks so lovely.
So let's kind of get into who's actually in this movie.
Yeah. We were talking about it before recording, and honestly, you said something that I thought was really important. This is probably the first time Disney sort of went in for stunt casting.
Yeah, one of the big things for this movie, Disney wanted celebrities to voice the characters rather than his team of voice actors. I'm guessing he wanted to get a little bit more spotlight, not just the follow-up to Snow White, but hey, so-and-so's in this, so-and-so's in this. Yeah, people want to say Aladdin was the first one. Not necessarily.
Yeah, it probably wasn't as big a hype thing as Aladdin was. I mean, when Aladdin came out, you know, we've talked about it before. When Aladdin came out, it was like, Robin Williams is going to be in this movie. They sold that movie basically on Robin's back, much to his chagrin, as we have discussed. But he did kind of start that with this. You know, it... Not in the same way, not hyped in the same way, but if people were to ask who was in this movie, they are people that were known.
Yes, known to the crowd of the 1940s.
Yeah, not many names that have really survived as household names today, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but at the time, they were all working actors with quite fascinating careers. So we'll see how we can kind of speed through this for you. Let's start out with Dick Jones, who played Pinocchio himself. Little Dickie Jones. He was a child actor. He was a little bit older. I think he might have been close to 20 by the time he did Pinocchio. But he had some bit parts in the R Gang shorts. He appeared in one of the Nancy Drew films that was big at the time. The year before Pinocchio. He was in a little movie called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington that you may have heard of with Jimmy Stewart. He played a Senate page in there. And then he voiced Pinocchio. After he voiced Pinocchio, he would go on to be really famous in Westerns. He was in the Westerns that were big all through the 50s. He worked with Gene Autry. He appeared on Lone Ranger. He appeared in a series about Annie Oakley. Because one of the things he was hired as a child performer to do was he was known as the youngest trick rope performer and horse rider in rodeos. And he was very good with a lariat. He was very good with a horse. And when Westerns really hit their big stride in the 50s, there was Dick Jones to come in and do what he was doing since birth, baby. But he, you know, in between that, he was nice enough to voice us Pinocchio. And it's a really good performance. It still holds up today. It doesn't feel forced, and it does sound like how a really naive child might talk. So bravo to him for that. The other well-known child actor that was in the movie is Frankie Darrow, who did Lampwick. He was also a well-known child actor who was also in quite a lot of cowboy pictures, also with Gene Autry, strangely. But he was also in some James Cagney pictures, which is probably why we get that weird 20s gangster kind of feel to Lampwick. So, yeah, he continued to have a good career. Unfortunately, he went to World War II as part of the Navy Hospital Corps and served apparently in a distinguished manner there. Unfortunately, while he was overseas, he contracted malaria. When he came back, he continued to act, but his malaria kept flaring up, the after effects of it. He kept having symptoms that got worse and worse, caused him chronic pain. He turned to alcohol for that. It really did not go well for him, unfortunately. It made him a bit of a loose cannon on set, and not a lot of people wanted to hire him. It was very risky to do so. So he started doing stunt work. And interestingly, he became one of the people who is inside the Robbie the Robot costume in Forbidden Planet. So you don't see him. He was, you know, one of the kind of puppeteer operators of the costume, but probably his second most famous role after his role in Pinocchio. He did a lot of guest spots on television, but it really, you know, his malaria and alcoholism kind of worked together to sort of keep him out of major roles by that point. So unfortunate, but that's the way it goes sometimes. Let's talk about the character whose movie this really is, shall we?
Oh, go ahead.
This is not a movie about Pinocchio. This is a movie about Jiminy Cricket. This is his story told from his perspective that happens to feature Pinocchio. Anyway, as the voice of Jiminy Cricket, we have Cliff Edwards. He was also known as Ukulele Ike. He was an actor and singer and ukulele player, as you may have guessed, worked in vaudeville, as so many of these early ones did, was part of the Ziegfeld Follies. He recorded a lot of novelty songs, pop songs, as well there. Maybe not the most famous person to have sung any of these songs, but that's the way it was at the time, is everybody recorded covers of everything. But he was interestingly known as the person who introduced us to the song Singing in the Rain.
Hmm.
That's not from the movie originally. It was reused.
Hmm.
And Cliff Edwards was the one who kind of originally recorded it and made it a song people knew. So anyway, he later went on, of course, to work with Disney, voiced in Pinocchio as Jiminy Cricket, and then he was one of the unfortunate crow characters in Dumbo.
He would actually reprise Jiminy Cricket in a later film, I believe. Fun and Fancy Free, I think it was.
Yeah, and I do believe he continued to voice him during, like, Mickey Mouse Show and stuff.
Like Mickey Mouse Club and all that.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse Club. I just recently watched the first episode of Mickey Mouse Club, and a couple of the other ones that are up on Disney Plus. And Jiminy Cricket had a bit every week.
Oh, I'm no fool, no siree. I want to live to be 93. I play safe for you and me, 'cause I'm no fool.
So, moving on. We have Charles, I believe his last name is pronounced Judels. It might be Udels. He was born in the Netherlands, so maybe it's Udels. I don't know. But he is Stromboli in the film. Stromboli is actually one of the official Disney villains.
Yeah.
The Disney villains line, much like the Disney princess line, has people who are in and people who are out. And Stromboli is one of the ones who is in, strangely.
Also does the voice of the coachman. So he voices two of the villains in this movie.
Yeah. But the coachman, even though I think he's kind of a bit more evil than Stromboli, is not a recognized Disney villain, I guess, in the official line. This guy had him a career, let me tell you. He appeared in 137 films, ranging from 1915 all the way to 1949. He was signed to 20th Century Fox. Originally, he was also well known as a voiceover actor in animated films. He did some work for Looney Tunes as well over at Warner Brothers. But his IMDb just goes on and on and on and on, and I can't even get into it. If the movie was made between 1915 and 1949, there is a good chance that Charles Judels was in it. So moving on, as Honest John, we've got Walter Catlett. And Walter Catlett was a well-known character actor at the time. He too also started in vaudeville, also went through Ziegfeld Follies, a little bit of Broadway, ended up in some pretty famous movies that you might have seen, Yankee Doodle Dandy with James Cagney. He's also in the movie Bringing Up Baby and in Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. But here he is known as the anthropomorphic fox, Honest John. He later showed up again with Disney when they did their Davy Crockett series. So, and rounding out the cast, we have the only woman in the world, according to Pinocchio, the Blue Fairy herself, Evelyn Venable. She was the original model for the Columbia Pictures logo.
Yeah, that Statue of Liberty looking character with the
Yeah, Columbia is her name. But yeah, but she is the woman holding the torch that looks vaguely like the Statue of Liberty, which was also based on the Columbia personification. But she was in tons of movies at the time. She was a very beautiful woman. She was also the model for the Blue Fairy, so she did kind of have that same look. She was in a really interesting film called Death Takes a Holiday, which you may know, the modern audiences may know, was remade as Meet Joe Black.
Hmm.
Do you remember that movie?
I
Which
did,
is about death taking a human body and falling in love with a woman. Yeah, basically, same story there. She was in the Shirley Temple movie, The Little Colonel. She played Shirley Temple's mother in that one. Just kind of a fascinating woman with a very extensive filmography who, you know, was kind of a mainstay in Hollywood at the time and will live on as two of the more interesting animated characters from the time, the Columbia Pictures logo and the Blue Fairy, which is, you know, strange but interesting. Good for her.
Let me get some of our mainstays. You know, Thurl Ravenscroft, who we've talked about a bunch as Monstro. Monstro doesn't really talk. He just growls.
And sneezes.
And sneezes, yeah. I didn't know.
They should have gotten sneezy from last week. To
I know. I didn't know whales could growl or sneeze, but yeah, there we go.
Yeah. And of course, Clarence Nash comes in as Figaro the Cat. We've talked about Clarence Nash before, the original Donald Duck. The one story that I kind of want to talk about, and it I can't remember if we really mentioned it last week. Did we mention Mel Blanc last week? Yeah.
No, we didn't.
Well, Mel Blanc, who you will know as the voice of all of the Looney Tunes, all of them. Think of a Looney Tune. That's Mel Blanc. He was brought on to voice Gideon the Cat, which is Honest John's anthropomorphic sidekick. Mm-hmm. Okay. He recorded a whole lot of dialogue, and then they decided to make him a mute performance, just like they did Dopey in Snow White. The interesting thing is that Mel Blanc was also supposed to voice Dopey in Snow White until they did the exact same thing. They wrote a lot of dialogue, and then they took it away. Unlike Snow White, Mel Blanc gives the hiccups or burps or something that,
yeah,
that Gideon does. So he is still credited because they did use some of his vocal effects.
One second.
But yeah, they took away most of his work. And this was the second time in a row they'd done that. So I'm beginning to wonder if Walt Disney hated Mel Blanc for some reason that we don't know. Like, Mel Blanc stepped on his foot or scratched his car. I don't know what happened between
apparently
the two of them.
He was, apparently, Mel Blanc was also supposed to voice Dumbo. And those lines got cut, too.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that there was some kind of weird beef that Walt had with him that he just kept hiring him and then going, nope, we're cutting all your lines. It seems a really vicious thing to do. So I don't know.
It's my competition, will ya?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit that Walt could sometimes be a little petty, and this is possibly one of the weirdly pettiest stories I think I've heard from the Walt years. So, I don't know. I like Mel Blanc. What you gonna do?
Yeah. So, we're not gonna hold your hand for Pinocchio. Again, much like Snow White, You know the story of Pinocchio. Even if you've never seen the movie, you know the story of Pinocchio.
I will give Pinocchio this. Unlike Snow White, there's a lot of plot in here.
Yeah.
There's maybe too much plot in here.
This feel, I mean, even the Book of Pinocchio is very episodic. Each chapter is another adventure that Pinocchio went on. And it does feel like that here. Much like Snow White, you could cut this up into about two or three different shorts.
Yeah, but this could be a serialized Adventures of Pinocchio in another life.
But again, that's how the book is, really.
Yeah.
So we get there. One thing, it must have been a while since I've seen this movie. For a early Disney movie that is intended for families, there's quite a bit of adult humor in this movie. Such as at the beginning of the movie, Jiminy is leaning on what he believes is a statue. It turns out to be a statue of a woman with a large bustle.
Yeah.
So the very, you know, again, he's unknowingly touching a woman's butt. Like, this is a Disney. Disney put this joke in here.
Also, Jiminy is really thirsty.
Yeah, for...
Like, he hits on one of the carved women that's on the music box. There's little dancing figurines and stuff. And he's totally, like, hitting on her and trying to get her to run away from her husband and stuff. It's like, and it's like, of course it's cute because it's a cricket and a completely inanimate object. But at the same time, you're like, this is pretty adult humor.
Also, there's a scene with a little milkmaid clock thing. And the way it's framed, it looks like she's supposed to be winking at him, and he kind of goes over and tries to get into the cottage part of the clock, and it's slammed in his face. Like, the thirst is real for Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah, that is one thirsty cricket, let me tell you.
Let's talk about all of these clocks. Okay,
a woodworker.
Yeah.
So it does kind of make sense. But at the same time, okay, this is supposed to be in Italy.
Yeah.
It's meant to be set in Italy. So why does everything have this, like, either German or Dutch or maybe Austrian feel to it?
I don't think they really care. A, this feels not American. Let's put it in.
Yeah. Other than Geppetto trying to sound sort of Italian-ish, and like we said, that the actor was not Italian. the actor that played Geppetto is Austrian. Come on, you know. So maybe that's why it feels so Austrian German flavor. But like, they're wearing like lederhosen and stuff, and all of the clocks have a real, like, I know their cuckoo clocks kind of have a Swiss feel to them, but these really do have all the decoration of like folk art in Germany, Austria, sometimes into like the Netherlands and stuff. I don't know, it's just so weird. Such a weird aesthetic. They're like, here we are in Italy, which is somewhere in the vague Germanic region of Europe.
Yeah, and we've kind of talked, you know, Disney would give bonuses to whoever can put a joke in the movie. There are so many gags in that one clock scene of the clocks themselves.
Yeah, the clocks themselves are kind of funny. If you slow it down and pause it on certain frames and
there's a chicken with the babies. There's a person trying to shoot a bird in a tree. There's a woman spanking her kid. And it's funny because you see all these clocks and they're all going off at the same time. And you get one by one, each and every little gag in those clocks. And then the top of the tip of the joke is Geppetto going, I wonder what time it is. And then looking at a pocket watch.
Yeah. Maybe they weren't all set correctly, you know? They might have all been set to the same time, but it might not have been the actual time.
Yeah. So there's one part that I kind of rewatching this movie, like, oh, that's a Richard maneuver, Geppetto, of they're all going to sleep, and he goes, oh, Figaro, I forgot to open the window. He's sitting next to the window. His bed is right next to the window.
Sit up, dude.
And he tells, hey, cat, open the window for me.
But you know you have had an older relative like that.
Yeah.
My grandmother used to do that for me. Can you get up and get me that's over there 2 feet away from me? And I'd go, Grandma, why can't you get it? Oh, I got a bone in my leg. You gotta go get it for me. I got a bone in my leg. I can't get up.
It took me forever to
realize, like, everybody has a bone in their leg, Grandma.
But I gotta admit, you know, Figaro's little sleeping quarters, his little bed, and as a kid, I never picked up on it, but his litter box is right next to his bed.
Oh, I didn't notice that in my rewatch.
Because it's a little sand pail and a little sand shovel, and it's not until now that I realize, oh, that's his litter box.
I just think his little quilt, like his little bed that's been carved for him by Geppetto, wasn't that nice?
Yeah.
And then it's got a little mattress, and he's got a little patchwork quilt. I was like, aww.
The fact that they animated Figaro doing the famous kitty butt wiggle before he jumps.
Yeah, that's, I mean, good for them. Somebody on that staff had really paid attention to their cat.
Yeah. For that early in Disney's history to be have that detail of a cat.
Yeah. Especially one that's kind of personified as much as it is.
Yeah.
You know. I kind of like him with the animals, though. Mm. Geppetto with the animals is very endearing. The way he talks to Figaro and the way he talks to his
goldfish.
Goldfish. Cleo, yeah. So adorable. He's so sweet to both of them.
He very much loved his animals.
Yeah,
and he
I mean, he's a bit like an annoying parent with the cat thing, and, you know, later he is so worried about Pinocchio that Cleo's bowl gets filled with soot. But for the most part, he still loves his animals. When Pinocchio comes along, he isn't like, well, I've got a child now, I'm going to get rid of these pets, which is unfortunately a thing some people do.
It's clear that he favors Cleo more than Figaro, though.
Yeah, but Figaro is also a bit... he's a cat.
He's a cat. He acts like a cat.
Yeah, he's a cat.
But, you know, he wants his pets to get along. You know, give Cleo a kiss goodnight. Like, I don't want to. He clearly doesn't want to give Cleo a kiss goodnight, but then he licks the bowl out of frustration. Like, meh.
Yeah, whatever.
Because he's a cat. Cat wants to eat the fish.
Yeah. But Geppetto really, really wants to be a father.
Geppetto has always been seen as an old man. Yes, there have been some adaptations. One starring Drew Carey, which he's a younger man. But the character of Geppetto is kind of always seen as an old man who just wants a child. You know, he never got a chance to have a child in his younger days, and that's all he's ever wanted, was this child to share his life with. Single father!
Yeah, we don't really know why Geppetto is still single at his age. Maybe he was married once and is a widower now. In the movie, at least, it's not very clear.
I always thought of it, he was just so dedicated to the wood carving job that he just never took a wife. He just never... And because he was so dedicated, because
who has time to court when you need to carve, right?
I mean, that's his business. That's how he makes his money.
Apparently, not a lot of it. He lives in the same room as the workshop.
I mean, it was the 40s. It was the depression time. It was hard on everybody.
I think this was meant to be set in, like, you know, 18 something.
Yeah, but considering your audience, I think people would more resonate that way, I guess.
Yeah.
So he makes the wish on the star. You know, he wants a child. He makes the puppet Pinocchio, and he said, he looks so much like a real boy. I wish he was a real boy. And he makes that wish to have a son. And here he comes, the blue fairy. Blue fairy looking very Snow White-ish.
Yeah. I think that was just the only way that Disney artist knew how to draw a woman at that time. It's like that or a mouse, you know?
She is the only realistic looking human character in this movie. And we talked about that previously with Snow White, is that that was their goal, to make the human characters look as realistic as possible. For this movie, all of the humans kind of look cartoonish, except for the blue fairy.
Yeah, it is a very strange, but it does give her an ethereal sort of feel.
Yeah.
She is very obviously visually different from every other character in the movie.
Yeah.
Which, as some sort of deity or whatever role she fills in the story, kind of makes sense.
Also, like, the first of what would become the, you know, the magical helper, you know, before we had the fairy godmother, we had the blue fairy.
Yeah. One thing that I kind of noticed is Geppetto does that Starlight, Starbright, first star I see tonight rhyme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Except that is not the first star you saw tonight, Geppetto, you liar. The sky is filled with stars. That's supposed to be a thing you do, like, right at dusk.
Yeah.
You know, for, like, little kids who are going to bed, like, the second the sun goes down, and you look out and you search for a star, and then you see it, and you do the little rhyme, and then you go to bed, which is what I did all the time as a kid. That was my childhood, trying to find the first star of the night so I could wish on it before I had to go to bed.
But he specifically calls this one the wishing star.
Yeah, which is it? Is it the wishing star, or is it the first star you see tonight, which is somehow magical? Pick one and set your magic on it. Yeah. I demand my magic make logical sense.
In a Disney movie.
In a Disney movie.
But yes, and the reasoning of Miss Blue Fairy was that Geppetto brought happiness to so many others. It's time that he had happiness in return. We're never really shown that he's given anyone happiness, but we could guess based on, again, he's an old man. He's done all this woodwork. There's wooden clocks, there's toys, there's puppets, you know, he's probably...
The music boxes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I loved my music boxes as a child. I had a collection of them. They were my favorite thing. And also, if he's that good at carving a marionette, he's probably made puppets and dolls for children.
Yep.
Over the year, like, that's obviously not his first project, you know. Mm-hmm. So
he's pretty much the local Santa Claus.
Yeah, probably. I mean, he's probably one of the places the children get all their toys.
Yeah.
So I can see that as a reasoning.
You want to talk about the fairy? Yeah, you want to talk about thirsty crickets? He's all head over heels over the blue fairy.
Oh, yeah. He sees the blue fairy and he's immediately like, let me show up in my worn
hobo outfit.
Hobo outfit. Yeah. And try to pick up the blue fairy.
And like, do you want to be his conscience? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, all of the blood in his body have gone somewhere else in the body. South, yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Let's talk about the deal the blue fairy makes with Pinocchio.
Okay.
She brings him to life, and then she says, you're going to be a real boy, which he's already a real boy at this point. You've given him sentience. Well done. I guess that she just means you're going to get an actual human body instead of animated wood, you know. But you have to do three things. You have to learn to be truthful and brave and selfless. And then you deserve to be a human. You have to learn the difference between right and wrong, and that will make you deserving of being a human. And I kind of want to go, Madam Blue Fairy, have you ever met a human?
Especially in 2021.
Yeah, like I said, not even 24 hours since. But yeah, the idea that he has to prove himself worthy of being a human, and I'm like, okay, well, we consider those three things to be exceptional in humans anyway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't even really have, like, words for them. We would, but not in the same context. It's like saying you're a brave human is different between saying, like, you're a human with a head and organs. You know, it's like that's kind of the baseline for a human.
Yeah.
But brave and honest and selfless are a step above. You know, they're what makes you the best of humanity, not just a member of humanity. I mean, it'd be great if that was just the baseline.
Yeah.
But, so I wonder why the Blue Fairy is like, in order to be human, you have to prove not only that you're just an average human, but a above average.
Yeah,
exceptional human. I don't know. It seems weird.
I mean, clearly we have Jiminy who knows the difference between right and wrong. Does that mean he's worthy of being a human?
I mean, does he really? Because for a conscience, he screws up a bunch in this film.
Yeah, and he even admits it, you know, his first day on the job and he screws it up.
Well, we're not hand-holding through the plot here, so let's feel free to skip around.
Yeah.
When Pinocchio gets taken away by Honest John during the actor song. I love that song, by the way. As someone who has spent a lot of time in community theater, that is a song that gets sung backstage a lot. But there is a moment in the film where Jiminy says, I should go back home and tell his father. And then he stops and he says, nah, that would be snitching. I better get him myself. And I'm like, did Jiminy Cricket just go all snitches get stitches on me?
I guess he didn't want Pinocchio to get in trouble. So he tried to, oh, if I get him out of this now, I still have time to get him to go to school and there'd be no problems.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just seems weird. Like, by that point, he's kind of tried a little bit. You know, he's yelled at him and he's tried to get him to come back and everything, but I don't know. It seems so weird.
Does Geppetto even know about Jiminy, though?
Well, no. I'm not sure he ever really knows about Jiminy. I don't think they ever actually interact.
Like, yeah. I mean, even towards the end when they're in the whale, Jiminy is out of the whale. He never gets in.
Yeah.
So it's like those two characters never interact in the entire movie. So why would going to Geppetto even work at that point?
Well, obviously he can talk. He was just hiding from Geppetto because he wanted to stay in the nice warm house instead of being kicked out. As one would, or worse, squished because he is
a probably would have been eaten by Figaro.
Yeah, maybe. So yeah, I don't know. This movie, like I said, this is Jiminy Cricket's movie, so it's almost like he is learning the moral lesson as much as Pinocchio is.
Mm-hmm. So, on the first day of his existence as a sentient creature, Pinocchio, Geppetto just says, oh, you have to go to sleep because you have to go to school tomorrow. And it's like, this is like...
Why?
because
why do I have to go to sleep? Why do I have to go to school? Why is the cat in the bed with us?
Even though the cat has,
cat
his,
has
own bed,
his own bed.
He opened the window. He could sleep in the big bed. But yeah, I mean, I know it's logic into a kids movie, but where's the school enrollment on that? And you just don't send your kid saying, "Hey, go to school," and then they go to school.
Well, at the time, yeah, you kind of did.
Mm.
My great grandfather, who was born in the late 1800s, they sent him to school, and he went to school for 3 days, and then he came home and he went, "I'm not going to school anymore." And they went, "Okay, that's your choice, small child." And he never went back to school. He learned to read and write on his own and stuff like that. But as far as formal schooling, he went to school for 3 days and decided it wasn't for him.
I guess it's more of the modern school, because you would still need to have an enrollment. A parent needs to sign you up for that particular school.
Yeah, well, once we started compulsory schooling, which is what we have now, you know, the government will show up and be like, "Why is your child not in school? Do you have a waiver to homeschool?" That sort of thing. But prior to the fight for compulsory schooling and child labor being made mostly illegal, it was just you'd send your kid to school, or you'd send your kid to work, or they'd go to work on days when you had enough food to eat, and they'd work on days when you didn't. Teachers just kind of, in places there were schools for children who weren't specifically being tutored as part of the upper class. As far as group schools, a teacher would show up, and whatever students showed up that day, they'd be taught, and maybe you'd get worried about your student and follow up if they didn't show up for a while. But if you showed up and was like, "Hey, your child didn't come to school today," and the parent's like, "Yeah, we had to send them to go work in the mine," you'd be like, "Okay, I hope they can come back sometime. Enjoy the mine." You know, it's just kind of the way it was. So I get it. I get why he would. But what I don't get is why he doesn't feel the need to be like, "Don't be terrified that he's a walking, talking marionette puppet."
And also, he somehow had a children's school book in his home that he gives Pinocchio to take to school.
Oh my goodness, that suggests a very dark past for Geppetto.
There, I mean, depending on which version, maybe he had a wife, and there is talk that Pinocchio was actually based off a son that he lost at a younger age, depending on which version of the story you're reading.
Yeah, like I said, that might be a very dark past for Geppetto. Poor thing.
So yeah, we get let's talk about Honest John and Gideon for a bit. Just a anthropomorphic fox and cat walking through the town, nobody saying anything about them.
Yeah, and this is kind of the only time we see anthropomorphic animals interacting with humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like the boys at Pleasure Island get turned into donkeys, but they're not like that's a very specific magic, and nobody ever wonders, "Hey, maybe my child is this donkey," you know? But everybody seems to be okay with just like a giant, you know, 6 foot tall fox wandering around.
I mean, there is a fan theory that these two went to Pleasure Island and got turned into the fox and the cat and they got off. But it's still weird that they're just walking around on 2 feet, anthropomorphized, with clothes, like nothing's wrong. No one questions it. They're just two people.
Yeah,
that
these characters are from a different freaking movie. I don't even know what they're doing here.
I mean, in the story, they were just a fox and a cat. They didn't walk around with actual clothes on. They were just a fox and a cat that somehow talked.
Yeah, and the thing is that they were going to have Figaro speak, I think, as well. And then they decided not to. I think I read that somewhere that, like, you know, Figaro, the kitten, was gonna talk and all. But it's like, the other animals don't talk. The only time we see an animal talk is these two.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys, one of the boys on Pleasure Island that hasn't completely finished the transformation into a donkey. So I don't know, man. It shocked me when I was watching this because it has been a long time since I watched. I have not watched this since I was a small child. This has never been one of my particular favorite Disney movies, so it's not one I rewatch often. But I had totally forgotten these characters were in there.
Yeah, I mean, because you get Figaro, who is in, they animate him as a regular cat, you know, on four paws, meows. But then you have, we have Gideon here, who's walking on 2 feet and was originally supposed to talk and
wearing clothes. Yeah, I don't get it. And honestly, other than being kind of weird henchmen, there's not really any real story with these two.
Yeah,
they're just there to get Pinocchio from point A to point B.
They're supposed to be the bad influence. And Jiminy is supposed to be the, you know, the conscience, you know, do the right thing. And they said, well, do the fun thing. They said, do the right thing, go to school. Do the fun thing, go be an actor.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels so weird. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't like these two. They're just, despite having one of my favorite songs in the film, it's just not my favorite part of the story because it's so out of place. The rest of the movie seems to kind of flow in a certain way. And then these two are just kind of a weird pebble in my shoe watching this movie.
You could have the same movie without John and Gideon. Let's have Pinocchio walking to school, sees a sign that says puppet show, and then he says, oh, I can go be in a puppet show. I'm already a puppet.
Or I can go watch a puppet show, and he gets spotted and, you know, whatever. I mean, there's tons of ways you can do that don't require these two characters.
Speaking of the puppet show, and speaking of, again, Thirsty Jiminy ogling the French dancing puppets with their puppet wooden booties in their underwears. And
yeah, I was like, stop ogling the can-can dancers.
Yeah, again, Jiminy, what are you doing? You're supposed to be the moral one.
Yeah, apparently morality has nothing to do with consent, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, we get Stromboli.
Yeah, Stromboli.
Is sort of treated as the main villain of the film.
Even though he's not in the movie very long.
Yeah, he has almost no part in this film, but he's there for like 2 scenes.
And he said, hey, here's a walking puppet with no strings. Its name is Pinocchio. I hope it works.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do have to mention this is another part of Disney sort of using a cultural stereotype.
Yeah.
Here's the Romani entertainer that comes to town and is also kidnapping children. I mean, granted, he's a puppet, but that's what they're playing off of.
He's kidnapping this child, saying, hey, you work for me now, and you're going to work for me every night until you're too old, and then you're firewood.
And he's got his Vardo. He performs shows out of. I mean, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. The way he's drawn in his face is kind of stereotypical of some unfortunate, you know, let's not really get into it. But you know what I'm saying out there. But this is not one that's dinged for weird cultural depictions, outdated cultural depictions. Disney Plus just has this contains tobacco use. Not even underage drinking, just tobacco use. But I will say that as far as early Disney films and shorts and stuff go, this is by far not even close to the most egregious one. So it's almost overlookable, sadly, because it's just, you know, Stromboli is in here very short time, and it's not overdone, but it is playing on some negative stereotypes, unfortunately.
But we do get the There's No Strings on Me song, which...
Also a good song.
Yeah. Also, you know, become a well-known song within the Disney legacy, and, you know, it ended up getting used for Ultron.
Yeah. To great effect with Ultron.
The fact that this song originally wasn't supposed to be in the movie, just in the trailer. They just planned to have that in the trailer, and then it got such a big response. Oh, well, now we got to put it in the actual movie. And it works. Yeah. You know, he identifies with Pinocchio. Like, I've had, you know, you controlled me, now I'm free to destroy the world.
Yeah. That would have been an interesting Pinocchio movie.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing me to life, Father. Now I will destroy you.
Father, I crave violence.
Yeah. But I really do like the song. It's a fun, catchy song. I can't believe that they never intended this to be in the movie, but Little Woodhead was always intended to be in the movie.
What I mean by No Strength was never intended to be in Ultron.
Oh, in Ultron. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you meant like it wasn't meant to be in Pinocchio, and I was like,
no, it was never meant to. It was just meant to be in the trailer for Age of Ultron, and then, well, we'll put it in the film.
Yeah. Well, that was a good choice too.
I want to talk about we kind of mentioned it a while ago when we talked about 101 Dalmatians, how they didn't really know how to animate moving vehicles so well, so they just made a model of Cruella's car and kind of rotoscoped it as it was moving down to moving across their table. This is where it starts with Stromboli's wagon.
Yeah.
They made a scale replica of Stromboli's wagon, rolled it across the table over some little Lincoln logs, and that's how they drew, and they just rotoscoped the video footage, and that's how they got Stromboli's wagon to move as realistically as it did.
Same with the coachman's carriage, I believe, later on.
Yeah.
Which is why the carriage looks so realistic, and the boys being transported by the carriage in the wide shot look like a nightmare come to life. I was shocked. I was like, this is such bad artwork. What is that?
This is probably the best this movie's ever looked. It didn't look this good in 1940.
Yeah, but it's, I guess they were just like, well, nobody will see it. And then, like, when you blow it up in the high def, it's like, oh, that was not completed animation. And in fact, is just like a weird horror film of Uncanny Valley of these, like, sort of vaguely humanish heads with eyes and permanently open screaming mouths.
Yeah.
It's like, go look at the movie. Well, if you don't want sleep tonight, go pull up the movie and freeze frame that when you first see the coach, and all before they zoom in, because when they zoom in, they turn into like reasonably animated children, but in that wide shot, it is filled with eldritch terrors. I don't know what these are.
There's that scene, kind of go back to the Stromboli. There's the scene here that it's kind of, even as a cynical adult, I kind of felt for it, is the scene where Geppetto, you know, Pinocchio never came home, so he's out there looking for him in the rain, and he sees Stromboli's car roll right by him, and he yells, Pinocchio, as the lightning crashes down, which means Pinocchio doesn't hear him over the lightning.
Yeah.
If that lightning never struck, you know, Pinocchio, Father, help me!
Yeah.
And the animation on the rain and the thunder for a 1940s film is pretty dang good.
Yeah, that it still holds up. It's very gorgeous.
But like I said, that scene gets me. It's like, you hear him, he just wants his son back, and he doesn't even know his son just passed him by. Yeah, to the point where he kind of has to get bailed out by the Blue Fairy, who even tells him, I can only help you once.
Everybody gets one.
Yeah, everyone gets one. I cannot help you more than once.
But this is also where we find out the most famous thing about Pinocchio.
if he lies, his nose grows, which it's apparently it was an old Italian saying that kind of gets messed up in the translation from to English. But yeah, every time you lie, it's as plain as the nose on your face, which is one of the big morals from the original story.
But also, the way that Pinocchio's nose is apparently capable of creating life.
Yeah, he lies so much time, his nose grows to have not only plants on it, but a nest and birds.
Yeah, it hatches birds out of his nose. Terrifying.
Yeah, and there are some versions of the story that say when he tells the truth, his nose shrinks again. I believe the original story was it doesn't, and he just cuts the excess branches off, and that's his nose.
Have you ever seen the, I think it's a Robot Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That shows Pinocchio, like, stranded in the wilderness somewhere, and he's made a fire to keep warm, and he's feeding it with his own nose, so he keeps telling lies, and one of the lies is, I don't know where Geppetto is buried, and his nose grows, and he breaks it off and throws it on the fire. I just love that joke. Oh.
And not only that, but apparently the wood ages, because not only does he keeps telling lies, and like it goes from a summer or springtime leaf pattern to a fall leaf pattern as the leaves start to die off.
Maybe it's some kind of temporal, you know, thing. Maybe if Pinocchio lives long enough, his nose will just be that long. I don't know. The other thing that's from Italian that sort of gets weird in the translation is why the boys turn into donkeys. Because originally on Pleasure Island, it was boys and girls. There were women in that story. But they were the children who shirked off from their schoolwork and stuff like that. That was the part of the morality. It's like, if you don't go to school and you don't do your reading and your lessons, you will end up ignorant and coarse like a donkey. And apparently in Italian tradition, the idea of donkeys as stupid creatures and only fit for the most menial labor and stuff like that. So it was a warning to children, like, if you don't go to school, you're going to end up as dumb as a donkey.
And the English version is, and the fact that they keep this in the Disney version, is if you slack off, you make a jackass out of yourself.
Yeah.
A Disney movie with a swear word.
You know, but the thing is that not as, you know, I grew up, that's just like a common word in biblical stories and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's more of a modern thing that you can say, you know, yeah. But
it's more of like being transferred to a word we say about the rear end that is not, you know, nice for polite company, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's, if you grew up in farm country like I did, it's just those are normal words you'd hear the old folks say to refer to livestock. So it doesn't really shock me that it's in there. I realize that a modern audience that's removed from the traditional usage only kind of realizes it as the curse words that we think of it now. But at the time, it was just what you said if you worked on a farm.
And that is where the terminology came from, is from the term jackass. Is that, you know, you make a whatever out of yourself, is that that's what you're making yourself out to be.
Yeah.
Even in the old 40s cartoon, like Looney Tunes, if someone gets embarrassed, they'll temporarily turn into a donkey, and that's what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, if it coming from a thing of children, hey, if you do underage smoking and underage drinking and you slack off, that's what you are. You're a donkey.
But also it was a bit of a, can we call it a bit of a classist thing? Because what they're saying is you're going to be in the hard manual labor. you're going to be stuck in the fields and stuff. And this is a story from the point in time where people were starting to be like, well, if I get educated and I get a trade and I can have a little bit of an easier life, and, you know, literacy was rising among the population and everything. So it's the idea of upward mobility as well.
If you go to college, you'll get a good job. Otherwise, you'll be flipping burgers for the rest of your life.
It's that exact same thing in an older context. Yeah, that is one of the morals of the story, is like, you need to go to school and better yourself, or else you're going to end up among the menial labor. So,
one of my favorite scenes in this movie, and the fact that it hasn't been used as react gifs online yet, is when Lampwick starts turning into the donkey, and then Pinocchio just shoves away the beer, and he keeps turning away. Pinocchio throws away the cigar. Like, that was made to be reaction gifs on the internet. While they're not, I'll never know. And they should be.
Yeah, it's a really good thing that, and honestly, Pinocchio is incredibly intelligent but very naive.
He doesn't know anything about the world yet.
And also, he doesn't quite get why this is happening to Lampwick, but he sort of figures out almost immediately, which Lampwick doesn't, that it has something to do with the drinking and the smoking and the playing pool and the
vices.
Yeah. He sort of makes that connection in a way that no other boy on the island really seems to.
I always thought of, I mean, there's other cartoons of the time and other cartoons that Disney would even do where, I mean, I would say especially in like 40s Looney Tunes, where something would happen and then you see a character throwing away whatever alcoholic drink they're doing. It's like, oh, it's, I've been drinking too much. I'm seeing things.
Yeah.
But yeah, he kind of, that's how I understood it as a kid, because I did watch those Looney Tunes as a kid.
Yeah, well, I mean, that too, but at the same time, like you said, he also puts down the cigar and he starts backing away from the pool table. So I think that we're supposed to get the idea that he's sort of cluing in that it has some connection.
Well, he kind of does. Like, he gets there like, well, we weren't drinking on the carriage ride. We weren't smoking in the carriage ride, and we're doing that here. And he turns, I can see, for lack of a better term, I can see, Pinocchio going all full, you know, straight edge as an adult. Like, no, I am not going to drink the wine, hon. The last time I did it, my best friend turned into a jackass. Oh, you mean he got stupid? No, he literally turned into a donkey.
Yeah. Would you though? Like, if that was your thing in childhood, like, one time I had a sip of beer and my best friend turned into a donkey and I never saw him again.
Yeah.
I think that you're never touching beer at that point.
Exactly. And I just, it's, and to kind of backtrack, there's a scene that's kind of heartbreaking, is that you get the kids that have been turned, and he asked him, what's your name? And most of them are just hee-hawing and they get their clothes ripped off and thrown in crates. And you get the ones that, my name is Timothy. I just want to go home to my mom. And it's like, oh, you can talk. Well, we'll keep you here until you can't. Like, you're still good to us.
In the book, I think it was mentioned that this is some kind of virus. And that hard work can keep you from getting the virus. But if you just sit around and be lazy all day and engage in vices, this is a very weirdly capitalistic film, strangely, then...
Trying to teach morals to kids, you see.
Well, what morals are we teaching, though?
Don't drink, don't smoke. Work.
Yeah, labor hard for the boss, kids.
Be productive in moral. Life. Be productive in life. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad because there doesn't seem to, we never find out what happens to these kids afterwards. They're just donkeys forever.
Yeah, I mean, Jiminy Cricket and Pinocchio, like, both just go back and that, like, nobody tells them about the magical island. Like, Pinocchio is never like, by the way, father, there's a magical island where they kidnap children and turn them into beasts of burden. Like,
that's nice, Pinocchio. Go to sleep. You have school tomorrow.
Remember when I had those donkey ears? Those didn't come from nowhere. Like, Geppetto has witnessed this, okay?
And Pinocchio's gloating about this. I got a tail, too!
Well, like I said, smart but naive.
Yeah. And the look of terror they animate in Pinocchio's face as Lampwick is transforming.
That is a terrifying scene, though. They really turn that into a horror film for, like, about a minute and a half.
Like, the fear of the Almighty was put into poor Pinocchio at that point.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really, you know, there is a genre of horror called body horror. Mm-hmm. You know, The Fly and stuff like that, where it's like your body is transforming into something that you can't control.
And the animation on Lampwick's hands as they turn into hooves.
Yeah, I mean, they exquisitely animate every frame of this transition, and it is horrifying. To good effect.
Yeah, and...
Unlike the weird, terrifying creatures on the back of the carriage, yeah. This was intended to strike a note of horror.
And... Unlike the other kids, at least the kids that no longer can speak still seem to have a bit of their sentience there. Lampwick completely loses his sentience. Like, instantly.
As he's already... because we see the ones getting put in the crates, and they're like, they've got their heads down, they seem to be fighting, going in, like, they seem to still have enough humanity in their brain to realize, like, this is bad, and I don't want this.
I'm just guessing that's how hardcore Lampwick went with the vices.
Yeah, he was kind of shown to be like the worst kid on the block.
Yeah.
Also weirdly anachronistic because he was suddenly just like a 1920s gangster movie.
And then, you know, the ears and the tail pop up on Pinocchio like, I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
He never goes full donkey. I always assumed it was because he wasn't human. He was a puppet.
Well, also, though, he wasn't doing the vices because of his internal desire.
Mm-hmm.
He did it because somebody else said, here, you should have this beer. Here, you should play pool. Here, you should smoke a cigar.
Because the other kids are doing it.
Yeah, his naivete was like, well, that must be what a real boy does because you're the only one I've ever met and that's what you do.
Yeah.
So I think it's a difference between the internal motivation. Pinocchio isn't doing it because he desires to be lazy or a bad child or destructive in any sort of way. I have so many questions about the running of Paradise Island. Don't you? Like they've got that model home and it's like, come destroy it, kids. And I'm like, who's rebuilding this model home after it's destroyed?
It's just, I don't know. I mean, it's just there. Then it's
those rides? There's like a log flume ride.
It's Disneyland before Disneyland started.
Do you know how, like, they have to check those rides every single day, sometimes twice a day. How is this being maintained? It's not being maintained by donkeys.
I think it's just magic. They just use magic, and the magic that turns them into donkeys also turns everything back to normal the next day. One thing I forgot is that once Honest John and Gideon hear the words Pleasure Island, they freak the freak out.
Yeah, they are Pleasure Island. Absolutely horrible.
That's where the theory comes from that they were on Pleasure Island. They didn't get turned into donkeys. They got turned into a fox and a cat. Well, that is
one of the other things they said was, but what if the cops catch us? Like, this is human trafficking. That's all they're doing. You maybe could also call it slavery.
Yeah. And apparently there are lines even these two, the fox and the cat, will not cross.
Yeah, I guess that's why they don't get to be on the Disney villains. I mean, Stromboli was ready to murder Pinocchio. That's the thing we didn't mention, but it's like, you're going to work for me, and when you're too old to work anymore, I will chop you up into firewood.
Yeah. They escape into Pleasure Island, make it home, Geppetto's not home. The Blue Fairy cheats. Because you hear the same music that plays for the Blue Fairy every time she shows up, but here's this little blue bird that drops a letter, telling them exactly where Geppetto is.
By the way, your father has been eaten by a whale.
Now, in the original story, it's just the neighbors saying, oh, Geppetto went off to find his son Pinocchio. Well, I'm Pinocchio. Oh.
Sucks to be you, kid. Yeah, but it is weird, but at the same time, like, you would have to voice create other humans.
I think they just wanted to give the Blue Fairy more screen time.
Maybe. I don't know.
And again, she said that she can only help him once, and she clearly is helping him twice.
Yeah. I think the Blue Fairy lives by the Pirate's Code. It's just sort of guidelines, really.
Well, I didn't help him. This blue bird helped him.
Did you transform yourself into a blue bird? Maybe.
Yeah, and the nice little cleverness of Pinocchio to tie a rock to himself because he is made of wood and therefore would float.
Yeah. Jiminy, however, shoves a rock into his pants and then goes, ooh, that's cold. And I'm like, you thirsty little cricket.
I mean, he doesn't... The fish are trying to flirt with him. Granted, fish tend to eat crickets.
Yeah, I mean, cricket is really good bait. I used to fish with crickets all the time.
He even says it before they jump in. I'm fish bait, but I'm sticking with you.
Yeah. And Pinocchio, I guess he learns to be selfless after this because he just totally abandons Jiminy, like, completely.
I think it's more of selflessness in terms of, because Geppetto saying, you know, go save yourself when they're drowning, and he just, no, I'm going to save my dad.
Maybe it's only selfless when it's given to a human, because humans are the only things that are important. I don't know. His plan. Just walk into the ocean and start asking random fish if they know where the giant murder whale is.
I wonder if he ran into to Marlin and Dory at some point. And all of the fish know who Monstro is, and they are scared of Monstro. Because he's a whale, and whales tend to eat small fish.
And apparently the only creature in the ocean with an actual name. The weird thing is there are some whales that are like that size. They eat like krill and stuff. Like, it's not even fish that size. They eat like smaller creatures. I don't know.
Yeah, but it doesn't
really
work
for them. They also can't swallow a human and allow you to live in their stomach. So, you know.
Yeah. But again, it's the book was written in the 1800s.
There's no such thing as blue fairies. I'm going to rip the Band-Aids off.
The Disney movie with a cartoon. But the plan that Pinocchio comes up with of building a fire with enough smoke to make the whale sneeze, especially I would, you know, coughing and, you know, just to get him out of there, it's actually a smart move.
Like I said, smart, but naive.
Yeah. The scene of Pinocchio face down in the water.
Horrible.
Yeah.
It's so heartbreaking. That's a child.
He sacrificed himself to save his father. But he still would. We saw the last 15 minutes of this movie. He's underwater talking. He obviously doesn't need to breathe.
Yeah. But, you know, how else are you going to show it?
Yeah.
The funniest bit in the movie to me is like Geppetto crying at the foot of the bed, and Pinocchio's like, why are you crying? He's like, because you're dead. And he's like, but I'm not dead. Yes, you are. Lie down.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Geppetto.
Yeah, it's just it does feed into some of the gags from earlier, like, you know, father, I'm here. Shut up, Pinocchio, I'm fishing. Pinocchio.
Yeah. But at the same time, it almost turns into a Monty Python skit. I'm not quite dead, Father. No, get back on the cart.
I'm not dead yet. I feel happy. I feel happy.
You'll be dead by morning.
And yeah, we kind of wrap this up with the movie with just Jiminy looking up at the wishing star, thanking the Blue Fairy for everything, and he gets his medal. Solid gold. It's a nice little movie, honestly. Honestly, I enjoyed Pinocchio more than I enjoyed Snow White last week. I know it's kind of heresy in some places.
Well, yeah, I did. This one had a lot more plot and a lot more meat to it.
Mm-hmm.
More character arc,
mm-hmm,
for more than one character, even.
Yeah.
I think the jokes were better to me because they were a little more intricate. It wasn't just like somebody makes a funny face or, you know, mm-hmm, some sort of slapstick fall or something. I don't know.
So let's ask the question, does Pinocchio have the Disney magic? I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, it still is not going to be my favorite film that I go back to and watch a lot, but it was better than I remembered it.
Hmm.
And I really do think that there is magic there. I think, however, that there's two different age groups to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you see this below a certain age, like, you know, 10 or below, or maybe 8 or below, this movie has one kind of interest for you. Mm-hmm. And then I think if you see it again when you're an adult, it has a bit of a different... It hits a bit different, but it's still good.
Mm.
However, I think that, like, between the ages of 10 and, like, 25 or something, this is probably one of the more boring films, and I think that's why I didn't rewatch it so much. But rewatching it now, I'm like, okay, I get what this was trying to do. And I respect it, and I understand it as, like, adults trying to teach children, and, you know, I get what it is. I'm no longer the target for the movie, but I get it. But I think there's, like, a point in your life where you hit that kind of middle section between those two ages, and you're just like, eh, there's nothing in this movie for me, you know?
That's most Disney movies, like, between, you know, when you reach a certain age, you wouldn't be caught dead watching a Disney movie.
Yeah, but as we've discussed before, I never really hit that age, but maybe this one film was my, like, one little Disney rebellion. I don't know.
Right. This movie does have a legacy that expands all over Disney. We talked before about, you know, the Disney logo, this Pinocchio's daring journey at the parks, in Disneyland, or there's the storybook river boat, which starts by you getting eaten by Monstro the Whale. Characters, yeah, characters in the parks, of course, and that weird time in the late 80s to early 2000s where Michael Eisner tried to appeal to the adult audience by opening up an adult club section of Disney called Pleasure Island. So, yeah, unfortunately, Pleasure Island is no longer there. That whole area, now Disney Springs. But, yeah, for a while they tried to... But, you know, the reasons of, hey, we want these vacationing families to stay on our property. Don't go into the Miami area. Stay in Orlando. Go to our nightclubs, not theirs. I get it.
Yeah, it was one of the weird things of... I had always wanted to go when I was kind of oldish enough, I guess. It was a bit more nightclubby adult area.
Yeah, it was from 89 to 2008, so there was a chance.
Well, Yeah, and I would have been at the park while it was open.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't have been the place that anybody in my family would have gone. You know, that was when I went to Disney the couple of times I've been to Disney World. It was during the time that Pleasure Island was open, but I just never. Also, as a kid, I had a weird idea of what it was. And it was kind of like built up in my brain. And I was like, wow, I really want to go there. Wouldn't it be cool to be an adult and get to go to the adult part of Disney? That's got to be Disney times like 7. You know, I don't really know what I thought it was. It was just like Disney, but cooler, you know, I don't know. But I never got to go. And honestly, looking back on what was there as an adult, I would have been like, eh, I probably would have found this place extremely boring.
So yeah, that's, you know, that's all we got with Pinocchio. It's all we can really say. Is there anything more?
It's a good movie. Go watch it.
Yeah, go watch it. So we're going to move on to next week's show. We are skipping ahead in the classic Disney timeline all the way 10 years to 1950. The war is over now. So we're going to talk about the big return, the first post-war film that Disney produced, Cinderella.
Back to princesses.
Back to princesses. So join us next week as we talk about Cinderella. And we will talk to you all next time. Bye.
Bye. Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.